So I don't have a gavel, but this pen will do. Call to order today's meeting. Do we do roll call first?
You'll need to read your script first.
Understood. Excuse me, when I'm reading my script, I would like to call to order the May 6, 2020 meeting of the TPA's Technical Advisory Committee. Please note that the pursuant of the Governor's Executive Order Number 20-69, TPA Operation Procedure Section 6.2, and the TPA Emergency Order Number 2020-01, this meeting is being conducted without having a quorum. Excuse me. Lost my space here. Without having the quorum of its member presenting physically or at any specific location and utilizing communications media technology instead. For today's meeting, we are utilizing Zoom webinar platform. Committee members scheduled presenters and the TPA's committee liaison will be appearing at today's meeting remotely, either via webcam or telephone. Committee members, please note that your microphone are initially set on mute. When you wish to be recognized, please use the raise hand function with the Zoom platform. You should unmute your microphone when you are recognized. Members of the public can join the meeting by installing the free Zoom app and entering the webinar ID and the password provided on the agenda. You can also join via web browser at the website provided in the agenda. You can watch the live stream of the meeting at www.palmbeachtpa.org/live provided in the agenda. Finally, you can join by phone or phone number, the webinar ID and password provided on the agenda. Public comments can be submitted online at the website provided by item 1F on the agenda. Public comments can also be made live through Zoom webinar platform. When you wish to be recognized, please use your raise hand function in the Zoom platform and then wait to be recognized by the chair and unmute by the meeting host. Staff, please call roll and we can establish that quorum exists and so that the public will know who is attending the meeting. Committee members, please remember to unmute your microphone prior to responding to the roll call.
Will Hicks.
Will Hicks present.
Modusum Alturk.
Here.
Steve Anderson. I have Anna Bulowski present, but she's not unmuting herself. But I do show that she's present. Okay. Terrence Bailey.
Here.
Jim Bell.
Here.
Jamie Brown.
Here.
Lorraine Cargo.
Here.
Natalie Crowley.
Here.
Wen Dang.
Here.
Brian Davis.
Present.
Kim Delaney.
Here.
Thomas Driscoll. And CJ, you'll need to unmute yourself, but he is present here for Jupiter. Alex Hansen.
Here.
Aaron Hoffman.
Here.
Kara Irwin Ferris.
Here.
Andrew Mack. And I just want to double check that he's not in the attendees or his alternates. I do not see them. Maher Mansour.
Here.
Christopher Marsh.
Here.
Michael O'Dell.
Here.
Richard Pereira. And I don't see Cynthia Fuentes as alternate. I just want to double check. Okay. Richard Reed. And I believe Kim Glass Castro is present. Yes, Kim Glass Castro is present. Maria Tahara?
Here.
Kenny Wilson? We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Hey, great. I believe somebody is sharing their screen at this moment, but we're going to move to item 1B, a motion to adopt the agenda for May 6, 2020. Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Moved.
Can I have a second? Okay. All those in favor, please say A.
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 All those opposed, nay.
Or have
okay. Motion passes. So moving on to item 1C, motion to approve the minutes for March 4th, 2020. Are there any changes to the minutes? If not, can I have a motion to adopt the minutes as presented?
Moved.
A second, please.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Item 1D, comments from the chair. I don't have any comments at this time. So we're going to move to 1E, the TAC liaison's report. So I'm going to invite Andrew to review the liaison report.
Good morning, everyone. Okay, just a few items shown on the screen. Boynton Beach Vision Zero. So the city of Boynton Beach adopted a Vision Zero resolution on February 4th to establish the goal of zero traffic fatalities on the city's roadways. So that is now West Palm Beach and Boynton Beach with adopted Vision Zeros. The state road set are due to coronavirus, there's been acceleration of a lot of state products throughout the state. One of the ones in our area is the Southern Boulevard widening project, and you can see that it's going to be advanced by about 3 months total in its timeline. The next one is a status update on one of our priority projects that we had as a local initiatives, the South Dixie Highway Corridor lane elimination. There's a new status. FDOT District 4 has decided to repeal their 2019 approval of the lane elimination project. That project's from South Dixie to Albemarle Road to Okeechobee Boulevard in West Palm Beach. There's still a potential opportunity to apply for AARP Community Challenge Grants. They extended the deadline to May 15th, so if you all are looking for some quick action projects that can go towards those grants, you still have some time to apply, a few weeks, so you can get those applications in. And then our next TPA Governing Board meeting is going to be held on Thursday, May 21st at 9 a.m. Before we send out the agenda a week before that meeting, we'll know if that's going to be in person or through a virtual meeting. And that's all I have for today.
Okay, great. So are there any public comments on this item? None.
A question for Andrew about the South Dixie Highway project.
Kim Delaney.
Yep. So question for you, Andrew. So what's the status with South Dixie Highway and what happens next? Either Andrew or when? Can you just fill me in?
I hear an echo. Right now the city is still assessing, just because we received comment, feedback, less than a week ago. We have passed a resolution to do a different lane elimination project on North Broadway just about 2 weeks ago. So we're very concerned. Obviously, what does that mean? This is inconsistent with the TPA's US 1 corridor study. This is inconsistent with our not only our penny sales tax referendum is for this project itself. So we have a meeting scheduled with FDOT to see what's our next steps and what does that mean. Staff is still reviewing the report that that DOT has conducted. It is a straight you know, VO versus CO ratio, look at capacity. One of the feedback that I've received is that, you know, because there are, growth along the corridor. So no, our study is, did not predict all that growth, but at this time during COVID-19, there's a lot of uncertainty of how travel demand is going to be. So, we don't know, and we're very, actually I'm very interested to know what, City of Lake Worth is, pursuing, because they recently was, received an approval to pursue a different section of the US one, you know, lane elimination also. So, I'd like to bounce this around if we want to have further discussion on this. No further discussion.
And I did mute you again, Kim.
I'm sorry, I'm unmuted. So my question is really to the larger implementation of the US One multimodal plan, multimodal corridor plan. So Andrew, maybe that's a larger conversation, because it seems as though everything the city was pursuing with South Dixie was consistent with and implementing the multimodal corridor plan. So that's kind of an important action. If the TPA's fairly high priority, which is the implementation of the multimodal corridor plan, is not going to be supported by the department, that's probably important information for us to have as a technical advisory group, right? And as a TPA board. Because there are lots of other projects that are going to be implementing various components of that, and it's a very different land use pattern, of course, for the county. So if you could give us, maybe not at this meeting, of course, but follow up on that, maybe on our next agenda or in whatever manner you think is appropriate, that'd be great.
Sure, we can do that for you all through the next meeting or through an email. We'll make sure that we notify you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Terrence.
Okay, Terrence.
It's been 25, 50 years since I raised my hand, but.
There's a raise hand function in.
There is? I didn't see that button.
If you pull up the participants tab, it'll open up. Oh. And then at the bottom, there's a raise hand function.
I see it now. Okay. So I guess this is a question for the body. Is there a value in requesting the sector of the DOT who did the analysis and is making the recommendation that is inconsistent with the TPA's guidance and study on the corridor to come and present to this body so we can ask them questions directly on its origin and how it ended up so what appears to be misaligned with our desire for that, for transportation, basically in that area, in the area east of I-95 on US 1 and Broadway through multiple municipalities. Is there a value of asking the DOT group to come in and present to us so we can get a clear understanding of how we ended up in this position?
Terrence, I think there is a value because, you know, I'm trying to figure out how is this consistent with the state's complete streets policy, the TPA's complete street policies. Unless you're going to acquire and indemnify more land, I don't think this can be accomplished. I do think that the state has a Vision Zero policy that how does this reverse decision affects every single one of the eastern communities, and because we're actively pursuing not only funding but design efforts and planning dollars, and we're reappropriating our capital improvement dollars to be aligned with the US 1 corridor study. I do think that it's, you know, at this point, I don't have an answer because we're coming into the next budget cycle, and I don't know if we should be removing the funding and like putting it towards other projects that's in need. So right now we're a little bit in a limbo. Maybe the next TAC meeting I'll have further you know, status, just coming from a city standpoint, because by then we'll have an official meeting with FDOT. But I do agree with you. I think, you know, I would love to have the request for DOT to come in and make this presentation on how their vision is aligning with the TPA's vision by reversing this decision.
Well, also, it's like, hey, the DOT is the entity that ran the study for the TAC on the corridor, on the US-1 corridor study for 18, 24 months. So it seems like the left hand doesn't know what the right is doing inside the DOT's organization. Or maybe they're coming out of two completely different divisions that are not in alignment.
And just to add to that, Terrence, so DOT was a partner in that study. It was a TPA study, just to clarify. But DOT was a very active partner along with the cities and Palm Tran and other entities. Andrew, as you reach out to the department, in addition to the planning initiatives that Wen mentioned, so there's an FDOT Complete Streets policy, there's a Vision Zero effort, and then there's also a formal lane elimination process that's supposed to be coordinated within DOT, and that's supposed to have all the different departments, just as Terrence is mentioning, coordinated, so there's a consistent review, there's a consistent expectation as to data, actions required by locals, and then a process to go through, and it's iterative. And so every step along the way is DOT engagement. And so it's very surprising and concerning to hear that after all of that coordination as requested by DOT and specified by them, all of a sudden there's a decision to repeal. So that's really kind of a significant financial burden also on local governments that are doing what they're supposed to do, which is good planning at the local level, you know, well-informed and well-coordinated, and then they get the rug pulled out from underneath them. So that other division, I think John Wong is the lead contact, and then there's a group of folks within DOT that are all participating in that lane elimination process.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah, just to let everybody know, with the South Dixie project, this project was approved by Central Office itself. So there was a reevaluation. So these are the documents that we received. There was a reevaluation of traffic volume collected in November of 2019. And the decision that DOT made was based on that. In addition to the process, right? We were at, because this is a joint effort between the city and the state was doing hardscape component. They were doing the roadway design plan. The city actually invested funding into doing urban design, landscaping, those elements. And we also have, conducted 60% utilities design, because there's water main replacements that we have to relocate due to the lane elimination project itself. Last we heard was back in November. We had a public meeting that is held and conducted by FDOT. And as you guys know, DOT's conducted public meeting is significantly different from the way that cities hold our charrettes and public meeting. There were a number of residents who lives on the east side of South Dixie. So if you guys know, US-1 throughout all of our communities are very diverse. There's the east versus the west. So there were a number of residents on the east side of US-1 that is against this project, and that was part of their reasoning behind this. Again, reading from the letter and the decision that was made, that was inconsistent, because at this point we still have a resolution, and as staff, I am to perform under directions from the mayor and our commissioners, but we still have a resolution that says that we as a city supports this project. And so until that decision is reversed, I'm not sure. I don't really have, until we come out of this meeting, then we'll know what is our next steps. But right now we're still reevaluating. I do think that it affects all of our funding. I can tell you right now, just the South Dixie project, and not talking about the other sections that we have pursuing, we invested close to $1 million worth of, design funding and like planning efforts and just funding in general over the past 3.5 years. Does anybody else have a question?
Is DOT participating in the meeting today? Is there a DOT rep in the on the call? Larry or anyone else?
Yes, there appears to be a couple.
Yes, I'm going to unmute John Podziewinski. Hold on a second. John, you just need to unmute yourself, and then you should
Hello,
be able
everybody.
To
I hope you can hear me.
Yep.
Yes, we can hear you.
I get a nod. I don't know if my microphone's working today.
Yeah,
okay.
I've got thumbs up.
So, yeah, I've got this is John Podziewinski, planning supervisor with FDOT District 4. I've got an email into John Wong right now, and we'll take back any of the questions. We're taking notes as the meeting goes on. So we'll take questions back to John and ask for clarification. And we'll ask if Chong is comfortable giving a presentation for the next TAC meeting.
And Madam Chair, I do have someone else raising their hand. I'm not sure if it is an.
Did that cover everybody's question?
I think we are satisfied with your response.
And Madam Chair, I think there's somebody else asking to speak. It may be an FDOT representative, so I'm going to unmute them. Hold on.
Okay, thank you.
You just need to unmute yourself.
I'm not sure if anybody, yeah, I'm not getting any feedback.
This is John Crane. Can you hear me? This is John Crane.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so this is John Crane. I'm the planning and environmental administrator at FDOT. You know, I just want to say we're certainly aware of the efforts that have gone into this. There was some skepticism raised as to, is this the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing? And that is not the case. This was not a decision that was made very lightly on the part of the department. We are committed to the same policies that are implemented across the state in terms of Vision Zero and in terms of complete streets. So the decision was made. You highlighted it very well, Ms. Deng, about coming out of the public outreach for the design project. We've invested money, obviously, in this project as well, and time and staff. We've invested effort into the lane elimination project. So what happened was when we received, there was negative and positive feedback at the meeting, but it was about 2/3 negative, and we continued to receive some negative feedback after that meeting, which caused us to revisit the study in terms of what's the genesis. You know, if it's just because people are unhappy, that doesn't usually cause the department to do any reversal of fortune or reversal of decision. But when we took a close look at it, counted revisited the field, counted traffic, and then looked at the growth assumptions and diversion assumptions of the original study, we did relook at that, and a lot of things have changed from the original report that caused us to go ahead and make that reversal. And certainly we will consider coming before the board, to present our findings. We did reach out to the city. We understand you have a lot invested in this, and it's not just, you know, a project. It's a vision for the city. So we're in the process of, I believe we've already scheduled that meeting. We'll be talking with the city to see what types of elements might still be able to be incorporated into a project. If not lane elimination, if the only project is lane elimination, then you know the discussion may go further. But so I just wanted to at least interject from the department's point of view some of what went into that decision making, and that we will continue the dialogue. Obviously, the city first, but we will engage the other stakeholders as well.
Thank you so much, John. So we'll have that meeting. I'm in a very difficult situation just because, again, this project and the North Broadway project that we are pursuing is on the penny sales tax referendum that went in for a vote at the penny sales tax a few years ago. So we still have to report to other committees as how we want to invest and spend funding on this project. So I'm hoping that after our meeting with DOT, that by the next board meeting that we'll invite DOT to do a presentation. And I think this is the board's ask to the TPA. Okay. So is there any other further discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going by my script here. We are going to There are no general comments that has been received on this item either. I'm asking TPA staff.
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. So we're moving to item two, an action item. So I'm going to invite Matthew Coma, the TPA CFO, to present this item.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We come before you this morning with the first of two agenda items for the Unified Planning Work Program. The first item is an amendment to the current UPWP for fiscal year 19 and 20. I think my mouse is going to work. Or arrow key.
Greg, just advance the slide if it's not.
Please do. All right, it's working for me now. Thank you. All right, in this amendment, we're going to essentially accomplish three things. We're going to deobligate $500,000 in PL funds and roll those funds into fiscal year 21. We are going to remove $600,000 in SU funding and apply those funds to the TPA priority projects in fiscal year 20. And lastly, we're going to add $211,000 in FTA grant funds that are not reflected in the current UPWP to add those funds. And with all these changes, we're going to realign the expenses and the funding so that they match through the rest of the fiscal year. Greg, would you advance a slide for me, please? That summarizes the amendment. Again, we are seeking recommendation of approval. I'm available for any questions related to the amendment.
Okay. At this time, does anybody have questions? Please use the raise hand function in the Zoom app.
We have one from Mo.
Okay. Mo.
Thank you. I have a question about the TPA's priority projects that you mentioned, that the 600 grand will be moved to be spent in 2020. Could you be a little more specific on what are those?
The funding that will be moved for the priority projects will follow the adopted priority projects list. So we'll use those funds that are available in accordance with that list.
So you mean the construction projects, right? Is that what? Yeah. Construction projects?
Yes, those projects on that list.
That's this year. Okay. And the other question is, why is it that we had that surplus money that was not spent? Were there some projects that we decided not to pursue, or what? What's the reason for us not spending a total of over $1 million, it seems like, right?
These funds are related to the operation of the agency, and it's really a result of the transition process and also the pandemic that we're experiencing now that have just affected our ability to spend on additional planning work at the agency.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions at this time?
Maria Tahara does, but just to note, Madam Chair, there are no public comments on this item.
Thank you, Maria.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. When he show, if he can show back the in the screen, he show three forms, PLSE and something else. Can you go over and explain what those forms are and what they are supposed to be for, what they are for?
Bear with me just a moment.
Yep. Thank you.
Now the screen's back. So the FHWA PL funds, that's our federal highway funding that we receive. FHWA SU funds, those are our surface additional funding that we take for planning at the agency from federal highway. And then the third source of funding is federal transportation funding. And all of those are used for conducting the planning work.
This is Andrew, also TPA. And just to clarify a little more on the SU funds, so what Mo referenced to, those are the ones that we use on products and building products as well. Those funds are more flexible and can be used for the planning of products. And that's what you see here for those SU funds. We had those pushed towards using those originally for planning purposes, the planning of the projects, and now they'll be used for more of the other priorities we have on there for construction and other phases in that fiscal year. The other two, FHWA PL and the FTA ones, those we are strictly using mostly for planning. But that SU one is more flexible.
And one point of clarity on the third column, those are federal transit planning funds. For planning transit.
Okay. Are there any further questions at this time? If not, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
I'm sorry. Let me say that again. Can I please have a motion to recommend approval for the fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 20 of the UPWP amendment number 3?
So moved.
May I have a second, please?
Second.
So I have Mo as making the motion and second by?
I have it as Kara.
Okay, great. All those in favor, please say aye.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. We do need a roll call vote on this just to ensure that we record everyone's.
Okay. So, can you please have a roll call?
Will Hicks?
Yeah.
Yes or no? Okay, thank you. Mo?
Yes.
Anna? You should be able to unmute and. Anna, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Terrence?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Jamie?
Yes.
Lorraine?
Yes.
Natalie? Wen?
Yes.
Brian?
Yes.
Kim Delaney?
Yes.
CJ?
Yes.
Alex?
Yes.
Aaron?
Yes.
Kara?
Yes.
Andrew Mack? Or Michael Rump? Mehor Mansour?
Yes.
Christopher?
Yes.
Michael O'Dell?
Yes.
Richard Pereira?
Yes.
Or Cynthia? Oh, okay. Maria?
Yes.
Richard Reed?
Yes.
Kenny Wilson? Or Janelle? Okay. It passes unanimously, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So moving on to item 2B, motion to recommend approval of the fiscal year 21 and 22 UPWP. I'd like to invite Matthew to present on this item.
Greg, the presentation doesn't appear on the screen right now. All right. Again, the second agenda item is seeking recommendation of approval for the draft fiscal 21-22 UPWP. And for a brief overview, the UPWP is our two-year business plan and our budget. It covers a period of July 1st of 2020 through June 30th of 2022. In addition, it constitutes our application for federal grant funds. And we use this document to identify what work we're going to perform, and we show that with deliverables or outcomes. Who's going to perform that will be our staff or consultants or both. When that will be done with completion dates and targets, and how much it will cost, shown by the budget and the funding source to accomplish the work. Get there soon. Okay. In fiscal year 21, our projected revenues are $4.5 million, and in 22 is $3.75 million. And as a breakdown, that's 93% federal funding, 3.5% from the state, and 3.4% from local funds. And we divide our expenditures into grant-funded expenditures and locally funded expenditures. Those break down into four categories each. Staff, travel, consultants, and direct expenses are all grant-funded expenditures. And then locally funded expenditures are advocacy, public engagement, staff performance, and the balances go to our reserve fund. To give a perspective on where we are in the adoption, the timeline here. Today we're presenting to the committee. The TPA board will adopt on May 21st, and then it will be provided to FHWA and FTA to approve and begin use by the end of June. That concludes my presentation. We're seeking recommendation of adoption, and I'm available for any questions that you have.
Okay. Are there any, does anybody have any questions? Please use your raise hand function.
Madam Chair, there are no public comments on this.
There are no public. Okay. Seeing that there's no questions, in discussion, can I have a motion recommend approval of the fiscal year 21-22 UPWP?
I make a motion.
Okay, Mo, can I have a second, please?
Second.
Okay, Kim.
Second.
And Kim or Jamie. So at this time, all those in favor?
Another roll call vote, yes.
Okay, so if we can have roll call, please.
Will Hicks?
Yes.
Mo?
Yes.
Anna? Anna, are you there?
Yes.
Terrence?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Jamie? Jamie Brown?
Yes.
Lorraine?
Yes.
Natalie? Or Michael Morrow if Natalie left? Okay. When?
Yes.
Brian?
Yes.
Kim? Delaney? Okay. CJ?
Yes.
Alex Hansen?
Yes.
Men.
Aaron Hoffman?
Yes.
Kara?
Yes.
Andrew Mack? Or Michael Rump? Christopher Marsh?
Yes.
Maher Mansour?
Yes.
Michael O'Dell?
Yes.
Richard Pereira?
Yes.
Kim Glass-Castro?
Yes.
Maria Tahara?
Yes.
Kenny Wilson? Or Janelle St. Ange? It passes unanimously, Madam Chair.
Great. So moving on to item three, a draft fiscal year 21-25 transportation improvement plan, the TIP. So at this time, I'd like to invite Jason Price, the TPA TIP coordinator, to present this item.
Can everyone hear me? Yes? Okay.
Yes.
So today I'm going to present the draft TIP. This will cover a five-year period from fiscal year 21 to 25. And within the TIP, it'll list out all the projects programmed by FDOT, locals, and regional planning partners. So to begin with the development of the TIP, it begins back in July with the adoption of the priority list for the TPA projects. And then from there, we submit that list to FDOT, and the FDOT looks at the priority list and incorporates it into their draft tentative work program that they develop and then provide to us in around October of 2019. And at that point, when they release a draft work program, we use that to create a draft TIP document and incorporate the list of priority projects that they funded in the work program. So that's what's before you today. It's just a draft of what the TIP will look like in its final, close to its final version that you'll see next month in June. And that's when it'll become an action item. And then we will approve the final TIP in June. So at this point, it's just a draft, and I'll go over some of the components of the TIP now. And once it's adopted in June, it will be effective in July. So the structure of the TIP has always been the same. It's fairly simple. It's pretty straightforward. It's broken down in the sections. The first section has the TPA priority projects, and that consists of our major TPA projects, and then our two local grant programs, local initiatives and transportation alternatives. And that's through our annual grant cycle that we populate projects into those programs through the grant process. Next is the FDOT priority projects consist of their mainline CIS capacity projects. Then the other projects are all the other FDO projects that aren't as significant or any local projects, as well as the other modes of transportation, airport, railroad, and seaport. And lastly, maintenance and operation, keeping everything in good condition and operating order, and all of the funding and projects that belong in that category. Next is, Next you'll see, this is a guide to how to look at either the executive summary or the summary tables in the draft TIP. The first thing that you'll come across is a summary of all the projects in the different levels are. Can you hear me? Okay. So this will, this will give you a, you know, a breakdown of what's, what are all the projects in all three of the programs, the major priority projects of the TPA, the local initiatives, and the transportation alternatives. And this is just a sketch of pretty much how to read the chart, you know, from left to right, what the year of the priority, that doesn't change. So as the projects move through, in the rank, it's, it'll say the year 19 and the rank of the priority of that year. And that'll stay throughout the life of the project as it moves through the TIP. And then, you know, the funding years, what's still needed and what its status is as it moves through the TIP. So now I'll just go over the three major programs in the TIP to cover, the major TPA projects. So here the our 5-year target is about $114 million, and we've been reaching that target. This year it's fairly significant more. There's a couple of highlights that caused the increase, and that's the reprogramming of the State Route 7 projects, both the addition on 60th to North Street, to North Lake Boulevard, and then from Okeechobee Boulevard to 60th. And there was a few delays for the other two projects at the bottom here, the Tri-Rail extension and then the Atlantic Avenue from State Route 7 to Lyon. That construction was up, was moved from fiscal year 22 to 23. Next is the local initiatives. Both the local initiatives and transportation alternatives programs have been producing really good projects, and they've been constructed throughout, and we're seeing a lot of the projects come online now and be constructed as they move through the process, and the, it gets closer to the construction years. And so, you know, our annual target of $100 million has been being met, and you can see from the highlights, and you'll see in the summary tables, from the highlights, all six new projects were funded in fiscal year 24 and 25, and there's eight projects being constructed next year. So as since the inception of the project, since the grant program, project have finally come online and reached construction, and that's why there's so many construction projects within this program that have been applied from, you know, 5 to 7 years out. See, so transportation alternatives, this is a 3-year time horizon, and our year is, our goal is about $9 million for the 3-year target, and it's been being met, and more projects are coming online, and 4 new projects have been funded from last year's grant cycle, and about 6 projects have been scheduled for fiscal year 22. From previous, about 3 or 4 years ago, that's, those cycles. So a lot of projects are coming online and being constructed now. And there's 2 other projects that are coming on in future years, the Belvedere Heights neighborhood and the FPL pathway lighting from Lampstein Lane to Las Palmas Street. And without reading through all these, I just, you know, it'll be in the packet here. This is just some of the construction we can look forward to next year. This next construction year of roadway resurfacing, roadway capacity projects, you know, there's some widening happening. And what's not on the list, but it's still happening, there's quite a few intersection improvement projects too that are listed. And those are, that's in within the draft tip as well. And then that's all I have. That's pretty much all the items in the draft tip. I'll field any questions best I can.
Okay. At this time, does anybody have any questions?
I have a question from Kim Glass Castro and from Mo.
Okay, so Kim and then Mo, please.
On the chart, rank 20-1, the Lake Worth Road improvements from Palmtran for transit, and then I guess 20-1A deals with signal prioritization. So those just placeholders for now, and you're figuring out what dollar amounts go in there?
This is Andrew. I can answer that one for you, Jason. So those are ones that we have on our priority list, but they did not get any funding towards them yet. Yes. So we do have a placeholder of $1 million for that 20-1A, which is the transit signal prioritization. So that one is not funded in this draft work program and subsequently not in the TIP. So it'll still remain in our next coming priority list. And then if funding comes available, then it may get programmed.
So how can we help influence that funding?
Sure, it's a good question. With our annual adoption of our priority projects list, which you guys will see in a few months, along with all the new local initiatives and transportation alternatives projects and all the other major projects, that's during that process when we officially adopt that list, that's just the priorities for the coming year. So that's the time we want to make sure that we have it in there again and make sure that it's moving forward.
Thank you.
Okay, Mo?
Okay, thank you. I have a couple of questions. First one is about item 19-1B, Okeechobee Boulevard from SR7 to US1, SR7 from First Hill Boulevard to Okeechobee Boulevard. And the description is to construct 36 enhanced transit shelters within existing right-of-way. My question is, these must be a Cadillac type of shelters. You have $8.25 million to build 36 transit shelters. It comes down to a little more than $250,000 a piece.
I think there's right away. I looked into that as well. I had the same thought. And I looked into it, and there's additional work in the work program that's more descriptive. It was just more of a lengthy description that I could include in the description in the TIP, but I think there was more than just transit shelters. There was stuff happening around the transit shelters that required more funding than just the transit shelter itself.
I think you need to get more explanation there, because your description says that those shelters are going within the existing right-of-way.
Are they? Okay.
If there is more.
I know there's more to it.
You need to explain that, I'm sure.
Okay. I can add a note and explain further.
Because I see that you had two other items in the LI for shelters, and they come down exactly to $20,000 a piece.
Correct. Mo, this is Andrew. The Okeechobee Boulevard one is part of that enhanced transit corridor. So these are going to be more premium enhanced shelters than you would see as a typical Pontran shelter. So these are ones that would provide a little bit more amenities.
They might have like dynamic messaging signs and stuff.
Dynamic messaging. Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're going to be electrified bus stops.
Wi-Fi and...
Wi-Fi. So that's going to drive up the cost, because you'll probably have to bring electricity to the site from some other location close by.
Okay, thank you. Okay, on item 20-1, the Lake Worth Road from SR7 to
US1.
Sorry. Am I okay to talk?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Item 20-1, Lake Worth Road from SR7 to US1, and SR7 from Lake Worth Road to First Hill Boulevard. And the description is the new enhanced transit service with associated multimodal corridor improvements. My question is, I see that I think Clara asked about this before, Clara. And my question is that you don't have any dollar amounts showing there. Wonder why is it that you don't show the total cost and in the first column and for the money, and cost also under the needs that is not funded. That's typically the way we do it. I wonder why we don't have any of that data here.
Sure, I can answer that one. So when you see the 20-1s or a number with a dash and then a subsequent letter behind it, that first row is typically the bigger project, right? And then you'll have the sublines under it. So for this one, there is a cost estimate in the long range transportation plan for an enhanced transit service along the entire corridor. But that's not something that is cost feasible right now. So you're going to see breakdowns of lines afterwards of when things, part of that corridor can be implemented and is cost feasible. And that first one is really just the transit signal prioritization. So in the future, you may see more line items related to enhanced transit shelters or other types of corridor improvements. But, you know, we still need to do multimodal corridor studies along many of these routes. This one's really just to provide a better center prioritization right now, a smaller scale project.
Thank you. But just, you know, to clarify, those are studies for the enhanced, right? It's to determine the feasibility and the benefit and the fitness of those premium, whether it is feasible or not for those corridors, right?
Correct.
Okay. My other follow-up question is, I noticed that we had several monies allotted for signal priority for Pontran, and it seems like they are allotted on per corridor, but they were put under in different fiscal years. And my question is that I thought that we discussed this before, and we thought that this would be a one single comprehensive project. It's more software based than, you know, it's equipment. So whether it is one corridor or more, it doesn't make much difference. So maybe it's a better idea to put them all in one fiscal year or on two fiscal subsequent fiscal years. What's your thoughts about this?
That's a good question, and you're a traffic engineer, so you're going to know more about how these systems work, especially for Palm Beach County signals and the best way to implement signal prioritization for transit. And this approach we have here is showing as going corridor to corridor, but we're still in discussion about how it's going to be implemented, so working with Pontran and you all to figure out the best way to get it implemented, if it's going to be all at once system-wide or if this approach of going corridor to corridor is more feasible.
Yeah, I guess there will be some flexibility in the future to move money from year to year, right, around to make it work if that proves to be the need.
Correct. So, for example, right now the only money that we have in there that is in the draft program for the TIP, I believe, is the Okeechobee Boulevard. And there might be one for US 1, I'd have to look, for signal prioritization as well.
Yeah, there is one for US 1 also.
Right. So the Lake Worth one doesn't have any funding on it right now. But these are in outer years. So, we can look into aligning these a little bit more and working with you all to make sure that they're happening at the same time if that's the approach we take.
Yeah, I want to thank you.
My perspective.
Yeah, thank you. I have one more question about a project that I could not see in the summary or details for this project, for this item, but I saw it in the draft when I went to the TPA website. That's about the, I think, freight priority on B-Line Highway. And this is a question for the folks from FDOT. I have a concern with DOT spending $2.5 million installing a priority signalization system for freight on B-Line Highway next to the Veterans Hospital. And I don't understand, you know, I think that they need to come to us and explain to us why is it a problem that a freight does not get in time to the port. They are waiting for them there to unload right away as soon as the trucks arrive. And because of our sluggish traffic progression on B-Line Highway, they get there a little late. I have concerns with priority. When we say priority, I think of fire rescue. I think of law enforcement. I think of mass transit.
But freight, I think we need to have some explanation here. I know that John is here on this panel listening, so my request is for FDOT to provide some more background and explanation for that project.
This is John Crane. I'll ask John P. if he has any background information. I wasn't prepared to speak on that specific project. If he doesn't have the information, I'll make sure that we bring it back to you. John P., are you available to speak to this?
I'm not sure if everybody can hear me, but I don't have any information on this subject matter, but I'll be glad to look into it. Mo, if you wouldn't mind reaching out to me offline, and I'll look into the specific information on this, and I'll bring that back for everybody at the TAC meeting.
Yeah, maybe we can take a look at if we can do a presentation in the next scheduled TAC meeting on this, because I do have, you know, more recently, I think the term freight has been redefined just because there's a lot of more startups are popping up everywhere. You know, freight delivery is no longer the big WB52 trucks anymore. We see Grubhub and, you know, Uber Eats clogging our system also. So if we can have a better definition of what freight is, and that will help help us make these decisions. Thank you.
Yeah, when I appreciate you bringing this up, but this is solely large, huge truck freight. It is meant for deliveries to the port, the marine port, Palm Beach port. It's not the other stuff that you're thinking of. And yeah, that's different type of service that probably deserves some attention. But this is solely for deliverables to the port of Palm Beach.
Okay, is there any other questions on this item? Seeing none, we're going to move to item 3B, the Florida Transportation Plan update. At this time, I'd like to invite an FDOT representative to present on this item.
Good morning. This is Marcia Taylor. I'm your MPO liaison for Palm Beach. On behalf of FDOT and our consultant, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share with you the Florida Transportation Plan and the update that is currently taking place. Our goal today is to inform you about the purpose of the FTP and why it matters. We also would like to highlight some key trends impacting transportation, and most importantly, encourage you to provide input to help shape the plan. At the end of our presentation, we have an interactive portion where you can provide us with feedback. So to participate, you will need your cell phones. I will now turn the presentation over to Jessica Jocelyn from Kittleson and Associates, Inc. Jessica?
Good morning. Yes, good morning, everyone. Thank you for having us today. I'm just going to now share my screen here. Everyone can see my screen?
Yes. Yeah.
Thumbs up? Okay, great. All right, well, thank you for that introduction. So I'm going to jump in, and I know many of you are familiar with the Florida Transportation Plan, but just for those that maybe aren't as familiar, we wanted to give some background and then, of course, give an update on what the latest cycle will include. So the Florida Transportation Plan is the single overarching statewide plan guiding Florida's transportation future. It is a plan for all of Florida created by and providing direction to the Florida Department of Transportation and all organizations that are involved in planning and managing Florida's transportation system. The Florida Transportation Plan provides policy guidance and establishes the policy framework for allocating the state and federal transportation funds, which flow through the Florida Department of Transportation's five-year work program. It is important because it not only sets a long-range vision for the future, but also guides transportation decision-making today. The plan considers several things that I'm going to walk through. The first, and it has come up in previous items, is attaining our goal of zero fatalities on Florida's transportation system, to provide a more efficient and mobile transportation system, to meet the needs of a growing and changing population, to make our economy more competitive, to enhance the quality of life and environment of Florida's communities, to increase opportunities for access to transit and other modes of transportation, and lastly, to address emerging issues such as rapid changes in technology. So one example we've been giving on how this plan does truly influence our future is in the 2020 Florida Transportation Plan that actually led to the creation of the Strategic Intermodal System, as we all refer to the SIS. So that was something that came out of the FTP. Also, many of you know FDOT prepares numerous statewide plans, which are guided by and help inform the Florida Transportation Plan. So some of these other plans that influenced the FTP include the modal plans and other plans such as the Freight Mobility and Trade Plan and then the Strategic Intermodal System Policy Plan. So during the FTP update process, FDOT also draws and visions and plans of partners, including your long-range transportation plan, regional planning councils, local governments, modal partners, and other state agencies. So now moving forward to walk through the different elements and goals. The current Florida Transportation Plan has three elements: a vision element looking out 50 years, a policy element with a 25-year horizon similar to your long-range transportation plan, and then the third element is an implementation element. For this FTP, FDOT is considering a fourth element, and that would be focused on performance and assessing the system performance. The Florida Transportation Plan goals shown on this slide are very much remaining largely intact to the last set of goals from the Florida Transportation Plan. Refinements made to them, though, such as linking transportation choices to improvements in accessibility and equity, reflect input from our partners and the public in the past. These goal areas are representative of the themes that have historically been highlighted in Florida Transportation Plans and consider emerging trends and technologies that are impacting the transportation system. Objectives defined for these goals often overlap across the different goal areas. This update of the plan will consider objectives and strategies within four cross-cutting topics to better align the objectives and strategies and to provide clear direction for implementation. Those four cross-cutting topics that are going to be included are technology, resilience, state and interregional transportation, and regional and local needs. So here's a summary going a bit deeper into those four cross-cutting topics that I previously mentioned. I'm not going to walk through all of the details here, but I do want to highlight the resilience column, especially given the COVID-19 situation we're in right now. Historically, at least personally for me, resilience has always meant environmental changes. But we want to highlight that the FTP will look, in addition to environmental changes, also considering economic and societal changes from a resilience standpoint. So here's one slide with just some infographics regarding the emerging trends that we're finding looking at data and conducting analysis for those four cross-cutting topics that have been identified for the FTP. If you want a bit more behind these trends, they are available on the website, which is www.floridatransportationplan.com. And I think a lot of what we're finding when you recently just mentioned specifically on the freight, that how that is occurring is really changing as we see over time. So now, as Marcia alluded to, we're going to have an interactive session as part of this Florida Transportation Plan presentation. So we're excited to be able to offer Poll Everywhere. There are multiple ways to get involved in this survey, and it is live, so we'll be able to see folks' responses cumulatively as we are typing in our responses in the survey. One opportunity to log in is on your cell phone in your internet browser to type in www.pollevvictor.com/F as in Florida, T as in transportation, P as in plan, 2045. Another way is if you have the QR code scanner on your cell phone, it should work if you hold it up to the very large QR code on this slide. And then there's also a texting opportunity. It's a little more clunky, but if you prefer to do that, you can text FTP 2045 to the number 22333. So I'm going to give everyone just a moment to pick which version you'd like to do. And when you get to the page, it'll ask for a name to be submitted, and then it will kind of sit you on a home page until I activate the survey. And I do want to recognize Kurt Lehman from Cambridge Systematics is participating and will be capturing the results as we go. And it'll be reported back to you all pretty shortly after today's meeting. So you can see if you want to go back what you all are sharing. Okay. So with that, I'm hoping everyone's logged in, ready to go. Okay, so now this should start activating on your cell phone. So the first question, there's three multiple choice questions and then two open-ended. The first is, what trend is the most important to and will have the biggest impact on Florida's transportation future? There are several options here to pick from, and they were created based on past feedback that the department has received on these different categories. I know the group's pretty large, so we'll give some time to think through. Give about 5 more seconds on this one. Okay, so resilience was the main one for this group. Okay, going to the second of three multiple choice questions. In your opinion, what is the greatest challenge for Florida to overcome related to changing technology and our transportation system? So here there are a few options. You can read through and select the one that means the most to you. Okay, it looks like we have a tie for regulatory barriers and integrating the emerging technology into an old and existing system. So the last of the multiple choice, and then we'll move into open-ended, is what is the top trend or disruptor affecting Florida's transportation system? And I know some of these options are a bit overlapping depending how you interpret them, but just go with whatever kind of feels right to you in how you define them. Few more seconds on this one, and then we'll go, there's just two more questions. Okay, so poor and inoperable infrastructure seems to be the dominant response here. Okay, so the first open-ended question, what regional or local needs should be considered as we update the Florida transportation plan? And I know some of the responses maybe have come up in past items already on your agenda. So I think we're timely to be presenting today. I'll give this one a little bit more time than the others. We have time to type it out. Okay, we'll give about 5 more seconds. Okay, so the last question we have, how can we best implement the Florida Transportation Plan strategies across Florida's varied regions and localities to ensure maximum success in achieving the goals of the Florida Transportation Plan? And I will say in the past groups, we've presented to safety, funding flexibility, and emphasis on pedestrian and bicycle needs have been common themes. So it seems consistent with what we're seeing here as well with you all. Give about 10 more seconds on this one, and then I'll be closing out. We can take any questions. Okay. Well, on behalf of the Florida Department of Transportation, I do really want to thank all of you for your input today. It's extremely valuable. I do just want to walk through a bit of the logistics in terms of how this will be put together. So all input received is organized by the project team and presented to the diverse 30-plus member steering committee, which is guiding the plan update. As previously mentioned, more information is available on the Florida Transportation Plan website, which is in the top left kind of header title of your slide, www.floridatransportationplan.com. As a reminder, you can also find more information on those cross-cutting topics I walked through. There are multiple ways to get involved even beyond the survey you did today. There are online surveys as well and general feedback forms should you wish to use those. Here also I want to highlight there is a schedule shown for 2020, which is subject to change as most of your projects are given COVID-19 impacts. Also because of COVID-19, the planning regional workshops are on pause. Some of you may have attended those in past editions of this, but those are on pause. However, the draft plan will still have a 30-day public comment period once it's available. And we are still targeting the final plan to be coming out in December of this year. So with that, I do want to take any questions also with FDOT staff on the line. And Lois Bush is leading this for District 4, working with Central Office. And she wanted to make sure that you all knew she's available and happy to talk with anyone about the plan, and her information is on the slide here. I'll leave it up just for a few minutes in case any of you don't have that information. But with that, we're open to take questions or?
Yep. So at this time, does anybody have questions?
Madam Chair, I do have a public comment.
Okay.
Khursheed, I did allow you to speak, so you will need to unmute yourself.
Hi. Khursheed Mahiuddin, Jessica, how are you doing?
Good, how are you? Good.
So quick question is that we all know in the field of transportation that as we go farther in the year for the planning horizon, the cone of error increases pretty significantly. And considering all the rapid technology changes, as we are experiencing Zoom meetings, and the effect of that into trip generation, future trip generation. And also, we have autonomous vehicles, which are not far in the planning, in the horizon now. Should a 15-year planning horizon be more appropriate than 25 that you guys are looking at, 2045?
Yeah, that's a good question. The transportation plan has varying horizons. So the implementation element is looking more in that short, near, midterm timeframe. And then it's your policy element that looks at the 25-year and then your vision looking at 50. So ideally, this plan is considering your near-term to your very visionary long-term. And we are taking into consideration the impacts of technology. But like you said, it is a bit of a crystal ball in terms of how much impact it does actually have. And even now with COVID-19, I know there's discussions occurring regarding how this situation that the global, you know, the world is in right now could also impact how we behave on the transportation system in terms of mode choice, telecommuting, and things like that. But I'll certainly make note of this back for the larger report that focusing on near term is a recommendation.
Yes.
Given the unknowns. Yeah. Good comment.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other comments from the board members? Please raise your hand. Use your Zoom function to raise your hand. Okay. Seeing none. Thank you so much, Jessica, for your presentation.
Thank you, Carolyn. I appreciate it.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next item, which is the 2019 Performance Measure Report Card. At this time, I'd like to invite Andrew to present this item.
Thank you. So I'm going to present the 2019 Performance Measure Report Card. And what this is going to be the performance measures that we adopted that we're required to have federally, and then also the ones that we adopted locally into our long-range transportation plan. And Greg, it looks like I'm having trouble with the going to the next one, so if you want to do it for me, that'd be great. So we have a vision of a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system. And in that, you can see our goals are preserve, safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal. So we categorize our performance measures under these five main goals. And the update that I'm going to give you, you can go to the next slide, Greg, is going to be just ones for the 2019, and some of them are also 2018. So when we get these measures in, is really sporadic throughout the year, and a lot of these measures are things that are new for the state to have to report on in a certain way. So we do get some of these federal performance measures and some of the state ones that are provided to us throughout the year. So you're going to still see some that are in 2018, but we'll be updating this report and keeping it updated. So you'll see some a bit more current on our website when we get new measures in. Greg, are you able to go to the next slide? One second, guys. Sorry. Okay. So the first one is preserve. So I'm just going to point out some highlights in the either in a red or green box. This one's for 2018. The new measure for pavement isn't reported yet. We should be getting it actually sometime this week, but we did see a big drop in interstate in good condition for our county. It dropped to 23%, which is pretty striking difference from 2017. So we're trying to figure out what the the change there was. We requested some information from FDOT, and we're waiting to hear back. So when we get an update, we'll let you all know on that one. And then that's mostly what I wanted to show on this one. The other measures are maybe changing a little bit, but they're staying pretty steady overall. Next slide. One second. Thank you. So the next one is SAFE. We have Vision Zero target here at in Palm Beach County for TPA. I'm showing you here 2019 preliminary numbers. The official numbers haven't been released. And I actually checked just the other day, and I did see that number of fatalities jumped to around 170. But when the final numbers do come out, it does look like we will have a reduction over the 2018 year. And it's looking promising for rate and number of serious injuries as well. So that's good to hear. Our number of rail fatalities did go up. This is a number from the FRA that we pull. We did see an increase in rail fatalities for 2019. Next slide. And this isn't something that you'd see in your backup, but I wanted to also just bring up a graph that shows some fatal crashes from the Signal 4 analytics, and this is for Palm Beach County. I just pulled it yesterday. It only had the numbers up to March for this year, but what you're seeing is 2019 compared to 2020, and there's been a lot of discussion about the change in the amount of traffic on our roadways and how that's impacting the total number of crashes and the total number of fatalities and serious injuries and the rate of those. This is just showing fatal crashes, and you can see that there is a big drop off from last year for the number of fatal crashes in the month of March. Those numbers might not be finalized yet, but it does look like we are seeing at least a total number of fatal crashes lower preliminary. You can go to the next slide. The next one is efficient. So we have two ones in here, reliability and productivity. In green, I wanted to mention just they're pretty similar to the previous numbers, but for 2018 values, because the 2019 ones aren't in yet, we do see some improvements to reliability, so how reliable our interstate is, and then also the national highway system that's not the interstate, and also truck travel time ratios. So we are seeing improvements there. The new numbers aren't out yet for 2019, but that's good to see. And then for productivity for passenger trips per revenue hour, tri-rail service, we did see a slight decrease. It's pretty similar to 2017, but we did see a slight decrease. And then the fixed route service for Pontrand, we did see an increase in passenger trips per revenue hour. For connected, this is where we track the number of bicycle facilities and pedestrian facilities on our federal aid eligible network. We did see improvements throughout this. We're getting better at tracking this too and making sure that we're up to date with these numbers. We added a little bit, quarter mile of separated bike lanes on the federal aid system, which was a local project. We increased an amount of shared use pathways. So those are ones that are 10-foot paved pathways or higher or in width. So we increased that by a good margin or around 11 miles worth. And we saw some other increases in the other ones for paved pathways and designated bike lanes and then total sidewalks. And then also in connected, we tracked some health inequity ones related to pedestrian bike facilities near transit hubs, elementary schools, and traditionally underserved. Pretty steady here with the same numbers. There was a slight increase for the pedestrian facilities within one fourth mile of a traditionally underserved community, and that jumped to 70.9 for 2019. Next slide. And then multimodal, we don't have the commuter mode splits out yet. Those are released later on in the year. We get that from the American Community Survey. But we do have numbers for annual tonnage of freight, for the Port of Palm Beach and Palm Beach International Airport. We did see a reduction in annual tonnage from the port, and we also did see an increase for annual tonnage for the Palm Beach International Airport. And that's all I have for you. As I mentioned, we'll be keeping this updated on the website when we get the new numbers in. So you can always go to our website, and it's really just there's a tab for performance measures, but it's also palmbeachtpa.org /PM. And that concludes my presentation.
All right, thank you so much. Are there any public comments at this time? Or are there any?
No, Madam Chair, there are no public comments, but Mo does have his hand raised.
Thank you. Mo?
Yes, I have, thank you, Andrew. I have a couple of questions for you. First, I saw that you got your crash numbers and stats from Signal for Analytics. That's what you mentioned. I think you have access to our crash database as well. And my question to you, have you ever tried to check to see where you get more reliable data? My information or previous experience had been that we have more crashes in our system than there is in the Signal for Analytics.
That's a good question. I've had trouble getting the VPN working to log into your system. I know you guys granted me access, but I still haven't had a chance to compare that. So when I do ask for numbers, I just request it through your office, directly to Fadi. But I have not compared it yet versus what Signal 4 is putting out.
Okay, thank you. And the other question is that you had reliability data presented basically on major roads and on the freeway system in the county. Question to you is, where did you get data from? What's the data that you relied on and you presented?
Sure. The travel time reliability is one of the federal performance measures. So all the states are required to report on it using the same type of metric. So what is provided is, I forgot which is the main source now. It's either here or INRIX, but it's coming from that data source for reliability. And we haven't gotten the most recent numbers from the state yet.
Yeah, but even if you get those from the source, you will still need to have your own methodology and include certain roads and not all the roads, obviously. Can you elaborate more on that? I thought we do provide some dashboard information through our active arterial management program that we have jointly with FDOT. We house them upstairs here in the TMC. And they do have to do some calculations to come up with those numbers, and they have to be done for given set of roadways and segments of roadways. So how did you get those? Do you have a set of roads that you calculate that metrics for?
Correct. So this is one that we just take the data straight from the state when they give it to us, and we're required, and the state's required, to report on the national highway system. So you're going to see it for the interstate and then all non-interstate national highway system roadways. And so that's the only one that we're tracking for travel time reliability. We don't have a local measure that we've adopted that encompasses other roadways.
Oh, okay, thank you. I thought you were talking about roadways in general, but maybe you're right. Your report is on the freeway system only, and I understand it's coming from DOT, right?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, are there any questions at this time? Seeing none, we're going to move to our last information item, which is 3D, TPA operating procedures. Again, Andrew?
Thank you. And staff, you can just keep the screen share and move it for me. So this is just going to be an update for you all on our operating procedures. So we consolidated, the board adopted a consolidation of our committee bylaws into one single document. So we don't have separate documents for every committee anymore. It's really just under this one document called TPA operating procedures. And in that, it repeals previously adopted bylaws. But we added new sections. Section 6, which talks about emergency powers, and then Section 7, which talks about amendments to the operating procedures. So I'm just going to highlight those real quickly. So the first thing is Section 6.2, which is in regards to virtual meetings. So this is only applicable when the TPA board or committee is unable to meet in person and is permitted by law, executive order, or similar action to conduct a meeting with a virtual quorum. So that's what we're in today. So this authorizes virtual meetings using communications media technology. And so today we're using Zoom webinar. And then we are also, through our virtual meetings, still providing the opportunity for public comment. So they can go to our website, and all of our agendas have links, which brings you to a page to put in comments. And that's what we did for the board. And then for these committees, since it's usually a smaller amount of public being involved, we give the opportunity just for them to raise their hands and give them the ability to talk. Next slide. The next one is Section 6.3, Emergency Powers. So when this is only applicable when the TPA board is unable to meet in person, and they're also unable to meet virtually. So if something has to come up where there's a meeting action to approve or amend an essential document, this is what these emergency powers are for. And this authorizes the TPA chair to take action upon consulting our executive director and then also our TPA general counsel. And then if there is an action taken by the TPA chair, this requires a presentation of the action at the next TPA board meeting for public input and then board endorsement or modification. And lastly, we have a section on amendments to our operating procedures. So this establishes a process for future amendments. The draft amendment must be included on the agenda, and modifications to draft amendment that occur at the board meeting do not require re-noticing. And I believe that concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Are there any questions at this time?
I do have a public comment, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Khursheed,
if you unmute yourself, you're able to speak.
Yes, Khursheed Mohiuddin, I actually raised my hand for the last presentation. Can Andrew go to the mode split, the target for the mode split in 10 years? That slide?
I'm not sure. I'm going to defer this to the TPA, since we moved on to another item already.
Just bear with me. Khursheed, I didn't see that your hand was raised. We were looking for that, but I didn't see it. But I will pull up that information. Hold on.
Okay. But if I can just make a comment, I saw there were very high.
If you may, please hold until Margarita verify. Thank you.
Is that the slide you were looking for, Khursheed?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
My question was that this slide is not making it clear that the target values are for the capacity or are they for the actual numbers. For example, 1.48% are walking, but the target is 5%. And that is, I believe that was based on a vision, not based on any actual patterns or stuff like that. And do you have eventually, are you going to translate that into cost and showing that what will actually take to achieve those kind of values? Or at least, if not, then at least your presentation should make it absolutely clear that these are to provide capacities for those values, not to have the actual... The values which are in 2018, 17, and 16 column, those are the actual values. Whereas right. Target is a vision value. And I thought that you wanted to provide capacity for that you know, people have the option, not the actual value, right? So those should be the vision values, correct?
I'm not sure what you're referencing in terms of capacity. Those are the values we used, that we set for 2030. Yeah, so this is out 10 years, and then we have a 2045 one as well. And you are correct that the other ones are actual values for the with a rolling 5-year average of 2016, 2017, 2018.
Okay.
Can I have some clarifications? Because I do believe if it's public comment, it's supposed to be public comment and it's not, to be back and forth. Can the TPA, can you verify?
Khursheed is limited to, 1 to 3 minutes depending on, the chair's discretion. Well, if it's the meeting's running a little bit longer.
That it should be, we should make it clear that target is the vision, based on the visions.
All right. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
All right. So we are moving on to item 4, administrative item. At this time, are there any comments from any board members? There are none. I have a question, more of a question for Mo, actually. I guess about a month ago when this stay-home order was initiated, I believe David shared some information of traffic reduction within our roadway network also. And within that report, I saw that we were down by up to 40% throughout the county. I was just curious, really, it's if those numbers have declined or increased since then. And then my other question is to all the committee members have anybody experienced really severe crashes within your city? Because now that we don't have the travel demand, or we're seeing very, very severe crashes within our roadway network. So I'm going to open up for one for Mo and two for discussion.
Okay, yeah. Thank you for bringing this up. We have been tracking traffic counts on about 10% of our count stations. We have a little over 500 total count stations. That's where we count traffic every season during the high season. So we picked about 10% of those towards the higher end of the traffic volumes to try to gauge and track the trends. And we started, I believe, in March 27th, the first time we did that. And we have been reporting those weekly. So we had observed steady decline that bottomed down at about 47% reduction in traffic volumes. But in the last 2 weeks, it had bounced back up, went up by about 2% the first the week before last, and last week about 6%. So it seems like we are seeing it picking up again, but still overall we are about 40 to 42% below the seasonal levels that we counted late in 2019 and early 2020. We also had a look, actually, I had Fadi look into the crash data to see if there is any parallels that we can draw. And it seems like he was able to look at the crashes between March 1st and March 15th that we have got in already from local enforcement agencies. And he is showing some reduction in crashes, and especially in the severe crashes. But, you know, this is a small sample, and I warn you against not doing much on this. You need much larger data to be able to establish a trend. But certainly you would imagine that crashes will be down, especially the severe crashes under lower traffic volumes.
Great, thank you. I don't have any further comments. If anybody has comments, please raise your hand using the Zoom function.
Madam Chair, I have Terrence and Jen.
Okay, thank you. So Terrence and then Jen.
Two quick things. As someone who's been coming to work every day from Wellington, Riviera Beach, I can tell you since May 1st, we're probably back up 20% just in my slowdown for anecdotal, but just at the number of lights and the traffic I see on Southern and I-95 coming into West Palm. it's back up. You're probably in that 80 to 85% of the pain that it used to be under normal circumstances. And that's coming through at 7:45 to 8:15 in the peak hour, on those two large roads. Also, now that we're remote, how are you going to deliver lunch to all of us, as is the chair's responsibility, when they let the meeting go over 11 o'clock?
Thank you for your comments. I'll send you guys all virtual lunch, okay? I'm sorry, someone else.
Also, Parker photobombed you in the background a little while ago. Tell us hi.
You can understand how stressful it is for the moms out there. I just want him to stay quiet and play on his tablet before this meeting is over. So thank you. Someone else had a comment?
Jim Bell.
Oh, Jim. Thank you.
Yes, as a new member of the committee, I was aware that there was a US-1 corridor study. Did that include Boca?
Yeah.
Yes, it did include Boca, and Kim can speak more about it because she facilitated the meeting.
Am I unmuted now? I'm guessing yes, you guys can hear me. Okay, so Jim, that study is on the TPA website. It looked at every segment of US-1 from Boca to Cuesta. Actually, I think it stopped in Jupiter because it was correlated to Palm Trans service. And Cuesta was already completed with the land elimination up there. And so you'll want to take a glance at that. In the TIP, there are a couple of projects that are either local initiatives or TAP that are implementing the recommendations of that plan. And it looked at both what's happening in the right of way. So the configuration of, travel lanes, their dimensions, some intersection improvements, transit, bike ped. And it also spoke to the land use patterns along the corridor. So you'll find it interesting. So along those lines, since I have a chance to comment, one thing I thought I would mention, because I try to find an upside in, you know, whatever the situation is, and this one is a tough one, but anecdotally, we always work on these bike ped conditions, wonder what's happening with regards to utilization because it's hard to measure and what's happening economically. I've spoken with 3 bike shop owners during this, COVID-19 time. The one I know the best, sales are up 300% in the month of April. So it's interesting to see kind of like some sparks of hope, just as an observation, and maybe more users when we get back into normal travel patterns. So just heads up, I thought I'd share that with you. Rentals are down, but sales are up for them because they can't rent their bikes during this time. So FYI, that's it. I just thought I'd share.
Yeah, thank you. That's really good and interesting information. You know, the city is starting to begin to talk about reopening efforts. And one of the things that we're thinking of is complete street closures in some of our restaurant area that we have, and looking at providing more space for restaurants to really use the existing roadway for social distancing. We will be measuring our efforts, like especially with one of the location we're thinking is Clematis Street itself. And within Clematis, we have sensors already. This is part of an iSense project that we're doing as a research project with FAU and the Knights Foundation. So we're going to be looking at how just people pattern in general and how they traverse and how that affects. But hopefully in the next couple months, we'll be able to, share some information with this group if they're interested on just bike ped access.
Madam Chair, I do have that Maria raised her hand, then Mo, and then Michael O'Dell.
Okay, so if we can go in that order. Thank you.
Okay, this is Maria. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I was following up with Jim Bell. The question that you had about the US-1 corridor study, right now, FDOT, we're working with FDOT for a lane elimination study on Federal Highway between Camino Real and Maestro Boulevard. And that one, we're just starting. We already had the pre-application meeting with FDOT. Kim Lee Horner is helping us. they are working on the traffic study. And I think we received a draft last week, and we're proceeding with that project. That's it for me.
Great. I believe Mo is next.
Okay, thank you. Actually, if you don't mind, I had on my notes a comment about a TIP project. I hope that you let me quickly talk about it. And it's actually more of a question. It's the Atlantic Avenue widening project from SR7 to west of or east of Lyons Road. It shows there as still as 2-lane to 4-lane widening. But we, when we met with FDOT, maybe 2 months ago, I think they expressed desire to make it a widening to 6-lane at once, because they figured out that by the time they would have to have 6-lane approaching SR7 and 6-lane approaching Lyons Road, by the time they transition back and on, they will be left out with a small segment, only a very small segment that would remain as 4 lanes. So they said that they, it will make more sense for them to make it 6-lane all along, knowing that in, down the road in the future, they will need to widen it to 6-lane anyway. My question is it the right time? And the FDOT folks are listening also. I'm using this as probably a reminder. I know that John Crane was here when we met with them. They presented to us that project. So I noticed that this has not been done, trying to upgrade and or change that description of that project. So that's a question, I believe, for Andrew. And if you want to answer that question, you and John, and then I can get to the other two announcements that I want to make.
So, Andrew, John Podrzewinski did raise his hand. Whenever you want me to unmute him, just let me know.
Okay, thank you. Mo, to answer your question about the Atlantic one, yeah, I guess the design hasn't been done yet. Are you talking about Lyons to Jog, or are you going to the other section?
No, Atlantic Avenue between SR7 and Lyons, and that one I think is okay. Under design now, and it's funded for construction, I think, in 22.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see it in 2023 here for construction, going from 2 to 4 lanes. I haven't heard anything about that from FDOT, so maybe FDOT wants to chime in on that, about that section going to 6 lanes. Right, because we do have it already being close to being done with design, it looks like.
John Crane is with us, right? John, do you remember that?
John Crane's no longer with us, but John Podrzewinski is, I unmuted you, so you should be able to speak.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Margie. And Andrew, thank you. Yeah, that's correct. There are changes that are going to be coming to Atlantic Avenue from State Road 7 to Lyons. The reason that those are not updated in the current TIP at this point, you know, in the draft TIP at this point, is because they are not updated in the LRTP at the moment. So we'll need to revisit the LRTP. At DOT right now, we're getting our ducks in a row to make sure that we have all the documentation set that we need for the limits and the scope of the project before we come back to the TPA and ask for changes both to the LRTP and then subsequent changes to the TIP document that goes with it. Just need to make sure that everything is consistent before we start asking for changes in one document that are not reflected in the other. So the project manager on this one is Tuk Lee. We will be reaching out probably, I'm going to guess, within the next month or so to coordinate this and make sure that it gets reflected in the TIP correctly. But again, we'll need to coordinate with the TPA with regard to how we should show that in the LRTP. And right now is probably, you know, taking on LRTP amendments at this very moment when all the other documents are in process is probably not everyone's top priority for a 2023.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, is it okay for me to speak now?
I believe if you could pause and allow someone else to speak, and then we'll come right back to you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Margie,
the last one is Michael Odell.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Again, going on to the pathway scenario, anecdotally, we're seeing a significant increase in our use of our pathways out here with bicycles and pedestrians. But one question I wanted to throw out to the group is golf cart usage. We're seeing a significant uptick in golf cart usage on our pathways. Are there other municipalities seeing the same kind of use uptick with those type of vehicles? Thank you.
I don't have any information of golf cart usage within the city of West Palm Beach, but within my own personal community, which is Boca, I see a lot of golf cart usage on the road, not so much as on the trail. I've taken the El Rio Trail many, many times during this time, and I've seen an increase as well as far as like visual observation, but no golf cart on those trails. Okay, Mo?
Mo, you'll need to unmute yourself.
Okay, am I good now? Should be good, right? Okay, so if DOT is doing a setup for a new concept for us here, it's not new in the U.S. It has been tried elsewhere. It's an emergency temporary roundabout at major signalized intersections. And the concept is that after hurricanes, very often we have situations where we have a severely damaged signal and or loss of power that cannot be restored quickly enough. So in the past, the only option we had was to stick, you know, stop signs on all four approaches and imagine how ugly that would quickly look like when you're talking about major intersections. So the idea is, and which was, implemented first in Bloomingdale, I believe, you set up a roundabout using traffic cones and or drums. And you set up a single lane approach roundabout with a free right slip ramp. It obviously would be much better way of controlling traffic until such time that you fix the signal and or restore power if it's power only. And so we reached out to FDOT, and FDOT were great about, you know, turning around, embracing the idea, and they are now scheduling to set up a trial at the intersection of Jug Road and Okeechobee here outside of our offices for Saturday the 16th, I believe. They just released a press release about this. And the idea is for them and us to experiment with it and see how much it would take and how would the response be to set it up and how much time it would take to take it down and think through the details of how this can be done. The schedule for it is now to start set up at 6 a.m. on that day, Saturday again, May 16th, and be done by 8 o'clock. Then go from 8 until 10 o'clock with the signals being dark and traffic going through that temporary emergency roundabout setup. And then start taking it down at 10 o'clock and be done by 12 o'clock. We have a drone. We use it for our business and in traffic. So we'll be flying that drone through during that time and recording the setup and recording also the performance of the roundabout. I thought this is something exciting, and especially for the folks that live not too far from that location, if they want to, you know, drive through that and see that experiment. I thought, you know, that was something that we'll embrace, and working with FDOT, hopefully that will be one of the things that we'll add to our toolbox
and will be introduced into our hurricane preparedness plan that the county has and DOT has one as well. That's it. If you have any questions for me on this, I'm here. Otherwise, thank you.
All right, great. So are there any further member comments at this time? Because Terrence said I owe you guys lunch already.
I think it's just Andrew wanted to make a final comment.
Okay. Andrew?
Thank you. Sure. I just want to mention for the US 1 corridor study, you can find our website at palmbeachcpa.org/US1. And then I also wanted to bring attention, if you haven't seen it yet, that yesterday afternoon, the Palm Beach County Commission voted unanimously to ask Governor DeSantis to include Palm Beach County in the phase one reopening plan. And that would, if approved, would mean that we would open stores, museums, and libraries and restaurants at 25% capacity. So that's just an update I wanted to give.
Great, thank you. So moving on to item 4B, summary points from the April 16th, 2020 governing board meeting. This item was provided in the agenda packet. The staff will only review if there's any question. So are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. So moving on to 4C, TPA priority project status report. Again, this item is included in the packet itself. So are there any public comments on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. And then 4D, next meeting is June 3rd, 2020. The next committee meeting is scheduled for June 3rd. We'll be providing information in the near future regarding where and how meetings are conducted. Thank you for your patience with us conducting the virtual TAC meeting today. At this time, the meeting's adjourned.